Wooden Spoons on CKUW 95.9 FM. My name is John Dick, and I'm here with community nutritionist Mary Jane Eason to discuss topics of healthy living, environmental issues, what's going on in our community, as well as other interesting things in this hour-long show. On Wooden Spoons, we recognize that all things are related, and with learning and awareness, we connect the dots and make up our world. Every Friday morning on Wooden Spoons, we speak with guests on today's relevant issues, share nutritious recipes, and explore important topics with perspectives not found in mainstream media. Time right now is 8:01 a.m., and the temperature outside is -3 degrees. Good morning, Mary Jane.
Good morning, John. How are you this morning?
I'm good. You?
Oh, pretty good. Yeah, it's a nice, crisp morning, and I managed to get here on time, missing a few buses, but anyway, here we are. And I just want to acknowledge that we are on Treaty 1 territory, the traditional land and waters of the Innu, Cree, Anishinaabe, and also the homeland of the Ojibwe, Cree, and Dakota, and Dene people, as well as the birthplace of the Métis Nation and the heart of the Métis homeland. We also acknowledge the Shoal Lake, number 40 First Nation, and its territory for our life-giving water. And I just want to make a comment that the usual program would have been Marianne Sorelli and Kaylin Spain on gravel roads and city lights. They alternate with our program under Wooden Spoons, but Marianne wanted me to take this session because she needed me to do it this time, so we're going to go back to the usual alternations after this. Anyway, I would like to introduce our guest, and our guest this morning is Indira Ramprasad, who has been a return guest, and I wonder if Indira is there.
I'm here.
Oh, good. So,
good morning.
Okay, I will introduce you, Indira. Indira is a return guest, Indira Ramprasad. She has a business titled Indo Massage Therapy and Healing Arts. Indira graduated from the Massage Therapy College of Manitoba in 2000 and has been practicing as a licensed massage therapist in the Wolseley area, and also outside of the Wolseley area, offering a variety of therapeutic massage approaches. She has traveled to Thailand and India, where she expanded her studies in therapeutic massage. Indira has also studied the Feldenkrais method under the tutelage of Giselle St. Hilaire, and now is a certified Feldenkrais practitioner. About a year ago, Indira took a follow-up course on the Feldenkrais method in Salt Springs, Vancouver. And today we will be talking to Indira about her work and also get information about the Feldenkrais method, excuse me, and why it is so different from other therapies, as well as being therapeutic. So welcome to Wooden Spoons, Indira.
Thank you, Mary Jane. Thanks for having me.
Okay, and I understand that you have a limited time this morning, so we just have to get right into it.
Yeah, I have to be. I have to leave by about 8:30. So
Okay, well that should we'll manage to do that for sure. Excuse me. So maybe you could just tell us how did you learn about the Feldenkrais method? Who introduced you to this method, and why did it appeal to you?
I first was introduced to it. My father was he discovered it. Giselle was teaching it at what's it called? It's Creative Retirement. So it's a really great. It's very good for elderly people because it's accessible. And so my dad had invited me to come to this class. And I went, and this was like, gosh, I think this was maybe 26 years ago. And I just thought it was really cool. Like, it was kind of like a puzzle. Giselle, she had just graduated from her training, and so that was kind of her first kick at teaching and, you know, making her way in this practice. And so I went, and it just seemed, it was really interesting. It was like a puzzle. She would ask us to do things, and then I would, you know, try to follow her instructions, and I just really liked it. It felt really good.
Okay.
To do it. So that was my first introduction, and I can't remember what the second part of it, of what you said, question was, but...
But anyway, yeah, well, I didn't know that this is how you got involved with Feldenkrais. I really didn't, so that's interesting. And maybe mm-hmm. you could give us some information about the founder of this method. And according to the website, which did not provide too many details, the method was devised by Israeli Moshe Feldenkrais, and he lived between 1904 to 1984, and it was during the mid-20th century. I understand that he lived in Germany at the time of Adolf Hitler's rise to power. Could you provide some information about Moshe Feldenkrais and how and why he developed such a unique method of healing?
So he became a physicist. He was a physicist, scientist, an engineer. And he had this recurring, he injured his knee playing soccer. But even before that, when he was younger, like he lost his voice, and he was, you know, it came from having to hide all the time. And well, he discovered that later, and so that's what he figured out. But he lost his voice, and people sent him to all these different people to try to, you know, fix it, and a psychologist, and his parents sent him, and nothing really worked. And it was through his own introspection that he realized that it had something to do with his psyche. You know, there was something there, and he was able to heal himself of that. But even at like a very early age, like at a very young age, he recognized this connection between the you know, the mind body, and even saying that is kind of doing it a disservice, because it is one thing, but we tend to separate these parts. And then in later on in his life, he had injured his knee playing soccer, and he figured out a way to basically heal himself. And it was a severe injury. He was going to need surgery again, and the prognosis wasn't very good. But he started exploring this relationship between bodily movement and healing, feeling, thinking, and learning. He was exploring this relationship, and as a result, he was able to restore his walking, and he made revolutionary discoveries, culminating in the development of this method called the Feldenkrais method.
That is a very interesting story. I was always wondering about that because I couldn't find any information on him, but that's a very unique story, and it's a lot more than I heard about. So thank you for sharing that this morning.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Also, I would like to say he was a judo master as well. He first practiced jiu-jitsu, and then he moved into judo. So he was very much, movement was a big part of his life, too. Yeah.
Well, that's quite amazing. And to know that, to even think that he was living under the rule when Hitler was in power, and how he escaped being drafted into the army or something. That's, anyway.
Yeah, he fled, I think it was to England just before... they moved into where he was. I'm not super familiar with the location that he fled from, but But he was born in what's the considered the Ukraine at this point.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So could you explain how the Feldenkrais method has been helpful to people? And then what are the features of this method that makes it different from other types of therapies?
Mm-hmm. So you want me to explain what it is?
How has it been helpful to people? Feldenkrais for?
Right. It's incredibly helpful to people. So it is an education system. It's a somatic education, and it has been able to help people that nothing else can help. Like nothing else can help them, but it can help high-end athletes as well. It refines your ability, you know, your ability to move. It's helped children who have cerebral palsy. Still to this day, there's nothing that really can help them. And, you know, physiotherapy they kind of force the muscles, or they I don't know if they still do this, but they would cut Achilles tendons of children because everything gets very spastic. But this work is work with the nervous system and giving information to the nervous system, and change can happen. And these children, if gotten too early enough, can actually be able to walk when typically they never would. There's another story of one of his students named Anat Banyal, and there was a girl that was born with half a brain, and her parents, and she was told that, you know, her child would never be able to function, that she'd be a vegetable, and that was the end of it. And Anat, who's Feldenkrais's, one of his students that specialized with children, they hired her to work with this baby from the time she was born. And she was able to function as a healthy child. In fact, she went on to university. She was the valedictorian. She had straight A's. She became a brilliant person. So how did that happen? How could that possibly happen?
It's beyond me. It's incredible.
It can happen because of the plasticity of our brain. We have the ability to build new neural pathways, especially when we're babies. But even as adults and throughout our whole lives, we can continue to grow new neural pathways. So other parts of the brain took up parts that the missing part would have done. And this child grew up to be a healthy, functioning, happy person. It's wonderful for strokes. So it has a million applications. I mean, it's basically everything that you want to do in life. It improves. Improves the way that you live.
You're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM on Wooden Spoons. And our guest today is Indira Ramprasad. And I'm here with John Dick. John, do you have any questions?
No questions, but it is just crazy to me, like, the origin story of this Feldenkrais method and the person who created it.
It is. It certainly is.
Yeah, he was a genius. Very, like, brilliant man. It is an incredible story.
Wow. Involved with the Feldenkrais method is posture and body carriage, as you were referring to, that is a very important part of everything. And how and why is this body, you know, posture and carriage, how is this important? Why is it important?
Okay. So Feldenkrais actually never talked about posture, but he did talk about acture. So
he talked about what?
He created a term called acture, like acting. It depends. There is no such thing as good posture. Okay, so this idea of good posture actually creates a lot of problems with people, because everybody's trying to pull. Like, I see this a lot in my practice as a massage therapist, and people are pulling their shoulders back and down, and then their necks are so sore and their shoulders are so sore, and because they're trying to have good posture. The problem is that the people that are telling them how to have good posture don't understand, and the people that are trying to reproduce this good posture don't understand that it's really about finding the easiest way possible. It's about ease, really, and being supported by your skeleton. So when we are supported by our skeleton, whether you have a scoliosis or whether you have a straight spine or one hip is different than the other, it's about finding the best way to stand up in gravity, how the force comes up through your skeleton. So sometimes when there's trauma, whether it be emotional or physical, Feldenkrais talks a lot about a lot of these muscular tension patterns, or as he would call it, would be considered parasitic activity, come from children that are being asked too much of at an early age, where they're just not capable of doing what their parents want them to do, right? You know how we parent in the West, right? So they're being asked too much of what they actually are capable, and they will develop these weird parasitic activities. Just any kind of emotional things. We do all kinds of things with ourselves, or if we feel incompetent, there's things that we do. And so basically it's about finding the simplest way to stand in gravity by letting go of the parasitic activity that we have. And a lot of it is it's subconscious. Right? This isn't conscious things that we're doing, because if we knew that it would be easier to stand up or walk or run without engaging some extraneous muscle, we would do that. But we don't know that we're doing it. So this method helps you to find that pathway, helps you to find that pathway to more ease by using the muscles that are required and not using the ones that aren't required. So it frees up a lot of energy in your system. So you can end up feeling a lot lighter and easier in your body. And it's like the practitioner, like when there's two parts to this work, and one is hands-on and one is classes. And when a practitioner works with you hands-on, they will help find that force. So with our hands, or with my hands, I will help you to find what that pathway is, where that force can come up through you simply. And then you can, once you feel that, once your body, once your nervous system senses that, of course it wants to do the best. So it will start to, change. And different people have different, rates of learning. Some people's patterns are more ingrained, or, they're not as open. And so it's different for everybody how everyone's going to receive it, But, yeah.
Well, that's very, very interesting, and it seems like it's a very subtle thing as well, having to do with the body.
Yes.
And
oh my gosh, yeah. It's very, very subtle. And you have to be able to, as a practitioner, you have to be able to sense the person's whole self, their whole body, their whole person as you're working with them. And the nervous system responds to like more slow and gentle. There's a law called the Weber-Fechner law. And basically, the larger the stimulus, the less we can sense, right? So if you are carrying a big stack of books and a fly lands on those stack of books, would you feel the fly on there?
Well, like that's...
probably not, right? You probably wouldn't feel the fly land there.
Well,
but
you'd never feel,
if you had...
it's difficult to feel a fly unless it's landing right on your skin.
But if you were carrying a little piece of paper in your hand and a fly landed on that little piece of paper, would you feel it? You probably would.
Yeah, I guess I have to try that out.
it's how our nervous system works, basically. Mm-hmm. Or another example is if you're in the sun and someone takes a flashlight and shines it behind you, would you see it? Probably not.
Nope.
But if you are in a dark room, there's no stimulus, and if someone shines a flashlight, would you see it?
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So our nervous system, basically, this is a long way of explaining that our nervous system works in such a way that the less amount of stimulus, the more it can sense. And this is about sensing yourself and the relationships of all the parts of yourself to one another. So, yes, it's subtle.
Oh, that's very, yeah, that's, this is a very unusual kind of subtlety and therapy. And I guess very few people know about Feldenkrais, I imagine, although there are more practitioners now today than before.
Yeah, and it's not a therapy. It's actually, it's an education system. So it's about learning how to learn at the foundation of it all. It's about learning how to learn. Yeah, it's really just, it's the difference between like, you know, giving someone soup at a soup kitchen and teaching someone how to cook.
Mm-hmm. How
one of the ways teaches you how to take care of yourself, and the other way is somebody doing something to you, giving you something. So when you through this practice, you actually learn how to move with more grace and more ease, and you will not get injured as much.
Mm-hmm. That seems to be very logical.
Yeah.
And how has the Feldenkrais method been helpful to you? And I know you are a practitioner yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's helped me tremendously. Actually, when I started, years ago, I traveled through Central America. And when I came back, I had this hip pain that would not go away. I was about 26, 27. And I went to physio, which just made it worse. I was in massage school, and nothing helped me. And then I had some Feldenkrais, and that helped me, as well as the Alexander technique. That's the thing that helped me. It was like these obscure, weird things that had to do more with awareness than it had to do with like actual people doing things to me so much. So that was the beginning of it. And it's helped me through my rehabilitation from my broken ankle. You know, I took my first steps in my training, and I attribute my, you know, how well I'm doing right now to the Feldenkrais method, because it was a very, very serious break. And
I recall that
so
you broke your ankle, and you had to have pins in it. It was very serious, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Mm-hmm.
And so the Feldenkrais method was very helpful in that healing process.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it helped me just as far as refinding the alignment within my own body, how my ankle worked, and not just my ankle, but how my whole system had to adjust to it. Mm-hmm.
Well, that is it's a very helpful technique for you to practice on yourself whenever you have an injury, that you can follow some of the methods of Feldenkrais in dealing with that. That's quite that gives you a lot of, that's very empowering, isn't it?
Yes, it sure is. Yeah, and I still need a practitioner to work on me though. Like, it's still helpful. I can't just help myself. I can, and it's also nice to have somebody work on me too.
And of course, you probably would go to Giselle, would you not? If you needed assistance, you would go to Giselle.
Yes, I would go see Giselle here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, I think another aspect, I get the impression that the features such as subtlety may be a barrier for some people, particularly in North America. Maybe I'm just assuming that might be the case. Would you comment on that?
On what about North America?
America, that maybe the fact that this particular method, the Feldenkrais method, is so subtle that this may be a barrier for some people.
Kind of goes against our North American mentality. Like, no pain, no gain.
Yeah, something more.
It's like no pain, no gain, and then we don't sense ourselves very much. We don't trust our own. We don't trust ourselves very much. We like to. So this really kind of asks you to listen to yourself, and it develops your own internal authority, you know, to choose. And the classes are slow. They're slow and they're subtle, and they're sometimes confusing because it's asking you to do things that you've never done before, right? We don't know how to sense ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people can relate to yoga very easily. It's like, do this, do that. People are really into it, and there's a, you know, definitely, and of course yoga is wonderful. I've done a lot of yoga too. But yeah, it's tricky. It's a very different way of learning and connecting, with ourselves. So, and if people have a hard time slowing down, or it's not that interesting, I guess. I don't know. Well, I'm not really sure.
Well, yeah,
I heard this really cool quote that if exercise and meditation had a love child, it's Feldenkrais.
Well, I can see where there could be, you know, it is being a subtle kind of healing practice, and people want to see instant results, or, you know, it's the sort of the Western model, I guess, being a very outgoing and so on. Anyway, mm-hmm. I'm whatever.
Yeah, and well, you benefited from it. You you broke your hip.
Yes.
Right? You knew.
Yeah.
And what did you find?
Well,
what did you notice about this work?
Well, I would appreciate talking about it, but I think you're very short on time, are you not?
Is it? I am. Yeah,
8:30?
I should probably go.
Mm-hmm. It's 8:30 now, but
maybe you can tell everybody afterwards.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I
would continue.
Okay.
I would explain my own experience, which is limited, with the Feldenkrais method. And but I understand that you have class to go to, or your work. And so maybe we could just end up with a song. And I think you recommended, there was a song I had sent to you, John. I don't know if you got it or not.
Yeah, I got it.
Okay, so well, thank you, Indira, so much for joining us this morning. And
thanks for having me.
Yeah, and we'll listen to the song, and then I will talk about my own experience with Feldenkrais.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, this. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Okay, bye.
All right, and the song I'm about to play is Medicine by Rising Appalachia.
Your silence when it's rooted in compliance. To stand firm in loving defiance. Make Archer Alliance. Give voice to the fire. Move people to the beat of the wind. Gather yourself and begin to dance the song until it ends. We are winners, champions of the light, forming in numbers and might. Keep the truth close in sight.
Medicine woman, medicine man. Walking with grace, I know your face and I trust your hand. Medicine woman, medicine man. Walking with grace, I know your face and I trust your hands. Find your teachers in the voice of the forest. Unplug, you can't ignore this wisdom of the voiceless. Remedies are bountiful and surround us from the garden to the farthest. Prayer made of stardust. Find your healing in the music that calls you, the voice that enthralls you. What do you belong to? Eyes up, there's the setting of the sun. Give thanks to each and everyone. The lesson is the medicine woman, medicine man. Walk in with grace, I know your face and I trust your hand. Medicine woman, medicine man. Walking with grace, I know your face and I trust your hand.
Back into the messages and action. The art is feeding, stop, stark the disbelieving. Cause the garden holds the shards, the medicine is in the seeds. When we hold tight to our right to protect, and we know our might is tenfold in connection. Our elders hold them bright lights, we protect them. The medicine is evident, the wolf, the hawk, the bear clan. We hold tight to our right to protect, and we know our might is tenfold in connection. Our elders hold them bright lights, we protect them. The medicine is evidence, the wolf, the hawk, the medicine woman, medicine man. Walk in with grace, I know your face and I trust your hands. Medicine woman, medicine man. Walk in with grace, I know your face and I trust your hands.
Okay, we're back. Well, that was quite a lovely song. Indira has just left, and I was going to share my own experience with the Feldenkrais method. It's a very subtle method, as I had explained. I had a few falls, which were totally ridiculous falls. And one was a couple of years ago. I fell in the kitchen, even. It was one of those things. I was reaching out. I was being told by my husband, don't fall, don't slip. And I said, no, I don't slip. I have good grips on my boots and everything. But when I went into the school, I had my boots on, and we had a board meeting, and everybody was leaving. There was only one person left, and I was just putting the dishes away, and I was reaching out. This bowl was falling, and I reached out, and I could have moved my foot except that my boot did not slip. And so I fell because I could not move my foot. It was one of those weird things, and so I thought I had sprained a muscle, and so I was pretty sore. But my son got on my case, kept phoning me, you should see a doctor. And I said, no, it's just I just have muscle pains. And so finally, I went to see a doctor, went to the pain clinic. Immediately, they said I had to go to the hospital. And so they sent me, I had to go straight to the Grace Hospital. This was during COVID, actually. And apparently, I had a broken hip. And so they replaced half of my hip. So I had a hemioplasty. That's what happened. And so I recuperated from that quite well. I had no issues. And then another year later, I guess that was in 23, or was it 24? Might have been 24. I had another fall, which was totally ridiculous, again, because I wasn't looking where I was going. And apparently this can happen to a lot of people. When they're walking, the sidewalks in Winnipeg, some of the sidewalks can jut right out, so they're not level. So you can't assume that you're walking on a level surface. And I was watching this parade going by, and I was interested in it because I thought, I was wondering what it was all about. And I was kind of watching, and my foot stumbled on this uprising on the sidewalk, which I didn't know was there. And inadvertently, I met somebody who had the same issue. She had fallen with the same reason for a sidewalk that was in the way. She stumbled on it, and she fractured her wrist and so on. So I fell, but this time I could not get up. I could not do anything. It was the most incredible experience. And so I had to... I was very, very grateful because it just happened that two health care workers were walking by as this happened. They saw what happened, and they were able to contact my husband. And then we were just close to DeLuca's store, and they got a chair from DeLuca's and helped me sit on the chair because I couldn't do anything. That was the most unusual situation. And so I had, what happened is the bone in my hip got completely broken, completely cracked in half, put it that way. And it was just absolutely shocking. I couldn't do a darn thing. And then I was very, very fortunate. I have to say, very grateful to the powers that be, because when I got to the hospital, I was on a platform or whatever, a stretcher rather. And then I had to wait, and the nurses prepped me for surgery. The doctor was working all the time, and they didn't even get the doctor's permission, but they knew it had to be done, and they told the doctor. And the next morning, the doctor came and said, you're going to be operated on at 11 o'clock. And so that's what happened. So I had the surgery, and I had two platinum rods put in my leg. And so they don't cause any problem at all. They're very non-reactive and so on. And so that was my experience, except that there were a lot more things that happened in that fall than I was aware of. And so my daughter, she's a practitioner, a naturopathic doctor, and she said to me, she said, you know what, there's a lot more that happened to you than the doctor was aware of. And so she was right. As a result of this, I've been having problems sleeping on my side. My side hurts, or this hurts, whichever side I sleep on. My heart might be hurting, so I have to go in one side. And so it was one of those things that later on I discovered when I went to a doctor. She took some x-rays and found out that all this time I had a fractured clavicle, and I didn't know it. And so these are the kinds of things that I was dealing with. So I've been, you know, having these difficulties, you know, sleeping properly and being comfortable at night. And so I went to Giselle Saint-Hilaire. She's a Feldenkrais practitioner. And I had two sessions with her. And it was quite amazing because, it again, is a very it's very subtle type of therapy. She worked on different parts of me. It's touching and realigning gently. I can't really, to tell you the truth, I can't really explain it. But it's sort of, I guess I could say that it started to energize me in a good way. And it made a big difference. And then I went to sleep at night. And lo and behold, I didn't have any discomfort sleeping. And so I went to a second session, and it was a continuation of the first one, and doing just different exercises. She was using a lot of foot movements and things like that. And just being aware of your body. And again, I feel that it has been very helpful. I was told that I should really get four sessions in a row. But I probably, Giselle is going to, I think she's going to Salt Springs, where she has a group that she meets every year, or she teaches every year. That's in Vancouver, I believe. And so, or someplace around there. Anyway, so it has been very helpful for me, and it has taken away all this discomfort that I've been experiencing. I have been doing yoga. I like to do some yoga exercises and different types. Some of the exercises that I was given when I was in the hospital from the physiotherapist. So I do one day that one, and the next day yoga. But I only do things that are, you know, not particularly difficult. So anyway, that was my experience with Feldenkrais. It's a therapy that is very subtle and is very healing, and it sort of gets you in touch with your body in a different way. And so I really appreciate the help I got from Giselle. She does charge. It's not covered under Medicare. It's interesting that Medicare has very limited coverage. Naturopathic doctors are not covered. Giselle is not covered. Feldenkrais methodology is not covered. And the corporate, I guess, it's a very corporate mentality that rules when it comes to the medical profession, because they they are based on, it's based on the economic system, I guess, our system of having, you know, it's a capitalist system that sort of affects how we think. And so these kinds of therapies that are very helpful are not really, they're not recognized by the medical profession. They're not recognized by the medical profession. And that is an outfall. And we have to realize that there is all sorts of alternative therapies. Some may be helpful, some may not. But I would say that Feldenkrais is a very amazing therapy. And naturopathic medicine is also very helpful. And there are, I know, a number of people that do not really see a medical doctor in the mainstream medicine unless they very much have to, because they get their support from alternative therapy. But these things are not recognized in our society. That's just the way it is. So that's all I need to say about that. So, I have a few other things I would like to discuss here as we have some time, and I have a few recipes to share. I'm just going to take a moment here. There's an interesting book by Suzanne Simard, and I have one of her books. I've read one of her books, and she's come up with another one as well. And this is organic, the organic bites. It's from the Organic Consumers Association. So Susan Simard has been interested in forests, and I read her first book. And she says that, and this is, she has another book that has come out, it's on regeneration and relationship. She says, forests are not collections of individual trees. They are living communities shaped by cooperation, memory, and cycles of renewal that stretch across generations. In her new book called When the Forest Breathes, forest ecologist Suzanne Simard deepens the groundbreaking work that transformed our understanding of forest ecosystems, expanding on the research she brought to wide public attention in Finding the Mother Tree, which was the book I read. Simard offers both a scientific and personal vision for how forests regenerate and what is lost when you disrupt the relationship that sustained them. Drawing from decades of research, as well as close collaboration with Indigenous communities whose stewardship practices long recognized forest interdependence, Simard challenges the industrial model of forestry that treats trees as isolated competitors. Instead, she reveals a dynamic system in which older trees support younger ones, nutrients and information move through underground fungal networks, and kinship influences growth, resilience, and survival. So we have to have a different understanding of nature. And of course, the corporate model only sees the value of nature in terms of profit. And so this understanding of nature, we need to change our understanding, because the way we are going through capitalism and the profitability model is going to lead to the destruction of all of life on Earth. And so we can't be continuing to build highways, continuing to mine, and continuing to take down forests. We have to start respecting nature and living with interdependence with nature, and be aware of the importance of nature. Without nature, the money in the world will mean nothing. because we won't even survive. So this is our time, I think this is a very critical time that we're facing, and we must make these changes. We must start changing our attitude and our understanding of our place in the whole system. We are not the top, we are not the leaders of the world, the leaders of the ecosystem. We are part of creation. And unless we start to have a different relationship with nature, we will continue to exploit and destroy, and then we will have a barren planet in the end. So I think with all the wars going on, in the world, and I'm referring right now to our neighbor to the south, which is, I have no words to express the president of the United States and his supporters, which have been trampling on human rights and destroying nature. This, the pollution that they're putting in the air, it doesn't stay in Iran. They may have bombed Iran and sunk ships and done all these things. But the poisons and the pollution that is not going to stay with Iran. It's going to be part of our world situation, and it's causing more and more pollution in the world. So that's one way of looking at it. So we have to get away from this corporate model and have a new relationship with nature. And I guess hopefully more and more people will come to understand that. I guess we're getting close to coming to the end of our program. I have a few recipes I can share. John, do you have any comments on all these things?
Not really, not at the moment.
Okay. There's a lot of information actually being shared by Dr. Meg Sears and other and Organic Consumers Association about cancer, and cancer is really caused by being exposure to carcinogens, and there's. There's a strong Organic Consumers Association says that there's a strong correlation between pesticide use and cancer risk, especially in the Midwestern United States, where farming is the main source of exposure to carcinogens. Counties with the highest pesticide use tend to have above average cancer rates. The link is even more clear when specific pesticides are matched with the cancers they are known to cause. Take glyphosate, a non-Hodgkin lymphoma. In Iowa, 95% of the countries with the most glyphosate use have more than their fair share of late-stage non-Hodgkin lymphoma diagnosis, and 61% are non-Hodgkin lymphoma hotspots. So this is a type of cancer. And agricultural soils exposed to glyphosate may be apparently an unexpected breeding ground for hospital superbugs. And it says if each year antimicrobial resistance is responsible for an estimated 1.1 to 1.4 million deaths worldwide. Now scientists have found evidence that the antimicrobial resistant isn't always driven by bacteria evolving to resist the antibiotics themselves. Rather, certain weed killers can have the same effect. So weed killers are also creating these problems with our immune system. And so there's a lot of information on the on the Organic Consumers Association website. about the different things that happen. The different effects glyphosate, for instance, has on crops and on our health, and it also linked to cancer. Dr. Meg Sears, who runs the organization Prevent Cancer Now, has spoken about the influence of glyphosate, that many, many cancers are caused by glyphosate, and they're happening to younger and younger people. At one time, as I've said before in the past, cancer was so very rare, absolutely rare. And I remember the time when it was rare, and or rarer than it is now. And now it's just sort of so common, and it's affecting younger and younger people as well. I guess it's about time to have a few recipes, and I will share them now as we're running close to the end of our program in Wooden Spoons. I have a vegetarian or a vegan recipe, and I also have a non-vegan recipe. Here's a carrot cashew casserole, and you need to take 2 medium onions chopped and 2 garlic cloves chopped and 1 tablespoon of olive oil, 4 medium carrots grated, and 1.5 cups of cashew nuts, 2 cups of whole wheat breadcrumbs, 1 tablespoon of tahini, and that's a sesame seed paste. You can buy it in most stores, and 1.5 teaspoons of caraway seeds. 1 tablespoon of tamari, or a tablespoon of other type of soy sauce. Tamari is a very good brand. It's a natural brand. 1/2 a lemon juice, or 2 tablespoons of red wine vinegar, and 5 tablespoons of water, salt, and freshly ground black pepper. So you preheat the oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit. Sweat the onion and garlic in oil until soft. In a large bowl, mix all the ingredients and add the salt and pepper to taste. The mixture should come together into a mass when pressed. Press firmly until into a 6.5 by 3.75 x 3 inch loaf pan and cover with foil, whatever loaf pan you happen to have, and bake for 1 hour. Remove the foil and bake for 10 minutes more. And let it rest for 10 minutes in the pan before unmolding. So this is a very healthy vegan recipe. And I think I can give you a quick recipe for making shepherd's pie. And I just made it up here last night. And it turned out okay. I had 2 pounds of lean hamburger meat. I get it from Timothy's Meat Market because it's from organically grown cattle, or let's say cattle that feed on a natural food. And 1 onion chopped finely, and 2 teaspoons of salt, and a sprinkling of pepper, 1 teaspoon of dried thyme leaves, sprinkling of Worcestershire sauce, several sprigs of parsley finely chopped, and 10 potatoes peeled and cut into chunks. So in a frying pan, you add 1 tablespoon or 2 of cooking oil, then you add the hamburger and fry until all the redness disappears while stirring constantly and breaking up the lumps. Add 1 teaspoon of salt per pound of meat. Add the thyme, the Worcester sauce, and finely chopped parsley. And then in a separate frying pan, you sauté the onions in a small amount of oil until browned and stirring constantly, and then you add it to the hamburger. In the meantime, in a pot, add the potatoes and cover with water and add 1 teaspoon of salt. Bring to a boil and cook until the potatoes are tender. Drain off the water in a large bowl. Mash the potatoes until soft and add 1 tablespoon or more of butter and or about 1/2 cup of milk. In a casserole dish, layer the bottom of the dish with mashed potatoes, then add the cooked hamburger on top with the remaining potatoes. Smooth the potatoes, and if you like, you can use a fork and make lines on the top of the potatoes, like you make a little lines, and then you sprinkle that with some olive oil and a sprinkling of paprika for color. You bake it in a 325-degree oven until the top is lightly browned, about 1/2 hour. Cut into squares and served with a salad, cooked vegetable, with a salad, a cooked vegetable or of your